Welcome to a podcast from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Economic Research Service, or ERS. This podcast is drawn from the ERS magazine Amber Waves. Each issue of Amber Waves is a window into ERS's broad research program covering production agriculture, food safety and nutrition, the food industry, rural economies, agricultural trade, and farm-related environmental issues. Amber Waves is published five times a year in print and online. You can find the entire article online at ers.usda.gov/amberwaves. We are joined now by Sheila Sankaran, the executive editor of ERS's e-zine, Amber Waves.
Thank you. Here with me today are Ed Young and Gary Lusher, two of the authors of the Amber Waves article, Relaxing Fruit and Vegetable Planting Restrictions. Ed, Gary, welcome to our podcast. Ed, please set the stage for us. Can you briefly describe the government payments that farmers receive?
Sure, Sheila. Farmers receive payments based on historic production of so-called program crops like corn, wheat, cotton, and rice. Millions of acres are planted each year to these crops. If a farmer harvests a fruit or vegetable from this acreage, they lose the payments. So farmers are restricted in what they can plant.
What made you decide to study these fruit and vegetable planting restrictions?
The pressure for this study really comes from a World Trade Organization interim ruling against our cotton program. The WTO ruled that since cotton producers aren't allowed to plant fruit and vegetables on these farm program base acres, that it violates WTO rules. Since these rules apply to all major crops, we decided to look at what would happen if the planting restrictions were removed for the whole set of commodities.
Could you explain why the WTO is concerned about U.S. farm programs?
That's a really big question, Sheila. Countries often impose policies that interfere with markets in agriculture. And as a part of the WTO, we agreed to limit these sorts of market distortions in our products in exchange for reductions from other countries. Many parts of the U.S. economy benefit, not just agriculture. WTO rules apply to things like software exports. And in fact, if we don't abide by our WTO commitments, countries can, in fact, place punitive tariffs on products that they import from the U.S., such as computer software. If listeners want to know a lot more about the WTO, there was a great article in last September's issue of Amber Waves.
Gary, how important is this issue? What does it mean for farmers?
Sheila, this is a real issue for most fruits and vegetable growers, which don't receive any payments. Acreage planted to non-program crops, like broccoli and onions, is very small, measuring in the thousands of acres, compared with program crops like field corn and wheat, with acreage in the millions. Because of this disparity, a small shift from field corn acreage into broccoli, for example, could flood the broccoli market and reduce grower prices. We studied this issue from a variety of perspectives and found that eliminating the acreage restriction would result in minor effects across most national non-program crop markets. At the same time, we really couldn't rule out the possibility of significant localized or individual grower impacts. Some farmers who are already producing non-program crops could find that it is no longer profitable, while others could profitably move into producing these crops. It appears that farmers with base acreage are the most likely to benefit from the removal of planting restrictions because they might receive additional revenue by planting fruits and vegetables.
Gary, do these planting restrictions affect our access to fruit and vegetables? In other words, would we have more vegetables on the market if we did not have these planting restrictions in place?
Well, our take on the issue points to relatively small overall market impacts. So we don't expect much change in the supply of fruits and vegetables. But having said this, we also recognize that there could be some impact on individual producers, commodities, and regions. In any event, these planting restrictions have no effect on consumer access to fruits and vegetables.
You mentioned that the production region or location is a factor in determining the possible impact of planting restrictions. Why is that, and what are the locations in question?
While commercial production of fruit and vegetables is found in every state, it tends to be concentrated with the lion's share of production found in Florida and California. In our analysis, right off the bat, we found that Florida would face little direct impact from acreage shifts because the small amount of base acreage in that state. However, acreage shifts could be important in California, which is the top source for fruits and vegetables, but it's also home to a significant amount of base acres for crops like cotton and wheat. Also at risk could be the potato and processed vegetable areas in southeastern Washington and southern Idaho. The area stretching from North Dakota through the upper Midwest on over to northwestern New York may also present opportunities for acreage shifts. This area is known for potatoes, dry beans, and various canned and frozen products. The coastal plain along the southeastern states is yet another area to watch, given the amount of base acres in proximity with fruits and vegetables.
Once a farmer decides to switch out of producing program crops, how does he or she decide which fruit or vegetable to produce?
Well, there are literally hundreds of fruits and vegetable crops, with each having their own specific set of supply and demand characteristics. Most fruits and vegetables are fairly expensive to produce, or they carry other substantial entry barriers. As a result, we think that farmers are more likely to switch to less capital-intensive crops, such as dry beans and pumpkins, or maybe even to processing vegetables, such as sweet corn or maybe even tomatoes. But as we've seen all along, if money can be made, farmers will indeed switch crops. A good example of this is a recent switch of some California cotton acreage into almond trees. They did this despite the annual loss of as much as $130 per acre in program payments.
You mentioned barriers to entry. Other than farm program rules, what other barriers might prevent farmers from switching into non-program crops like fruits and vegetables?
Well, for most fruits and vegetables, the loss of program payments is a less significant barrier to entry than some other potential impediments. Some of these might include the need for specialized equipment, such as sorters or harvesters. Others might include the need for specific production or marketing expertise. Basic agronomic constraints such as soil type or water availability for irrigation could also prevent successfully raising fruit and vegetables in some areas. Other barriers might include the financial risk imposed by higher production costs or perhaps even the need to secure sufficient labor for harvest, which is no small task in today's tight labor market.
Thanks, Gary. Ed, is there any overlap between producers of program crops and non-program crops?
Actually, Sheila, that was the most surprising result of our study. We thought there was a lot of specialization in production. But when we actually looked at Farm Services Agency data for farms that receive payments, we found that almost half of fruit and vegetable production is on these farms. In fact, we found that about 80% of the land used to grow vegetables like potatoes and dry beans is on farms that receive government payments. Many of these producers could increase production of fruits and vegetables by giving up the payments for the land that they're currently receiving payments for and planting fruits and vegetables. As Gary indicated, this is already occurring for farmers that are producing almonds.
So, Ed, what's the bottom line?
If planting restrictions are eliminated, producers who are currently receiving payments but decide to switch to fruit and vegetable production would receive the payments in addition to the revenue from fruit and vegetable production. This would give them an advantage over producers of fruits and vegetables who don't receive the payments under the current program. But before switching, farmers need to consider all of the barriers to entering the market and what the potential market is for their output.
Ed, Gary, thank you very much for that interesting discussion. I've been speaking with Ed Young and Gary Lusher, two of the authors of Relaxing Fruit and Vegetable Planting Restrictions, appearing in the February issue of Amber Waves. You can find the complete article at ers.usda.gov/amberwaves. You will also find articles on the effects of the depreciating dollar on U.S. agriculture and how farmers balance off-farm work and technology adoption. This is Sheila Sankaran. Thank you for listening.
This has been a podcast from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Economic Research Service.